Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, a very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your Yarn in Circle, the Murray Grapevine. It is National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm coming to you live from First Session Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, 1-800-422-416. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land we broadcast from and to all our traditional across the beautiful country of ours. Welcome back, National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong, you mob, too deadly. All right, then we're going to acknowledge National Reconciliation Week, 27 May to 3rd June. Be a voice for generations, that is the theme. So do act on it, you mob, and to our non-Indigenous brothers and sisters as well. Embrace it. Embrace it in regarding closing the gap and regarding reconcile this deadly nation. We're going to catch up a yarn now with Joshua Duke, Chartered Accountant, the inaugural chair and founding member of the Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Chartered Accountant Committee. Talk about Monash Business School addresses the lack of Indigenous participation at the most senior levels of corporate life. And on the line we have Joshua. Joshua, good morning. How are you?
Fantastic, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, Joshua. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, brother, let the mob know who you mob. Where are you from?
Thanks. Thanks for having me, by the way. Joshua Duke. I'm a very proud Dungati man from Kempsey, New South Wales.
Mm. Daily footprint, brother. Thank you very much. Now, congratulations, Chartered Accountant and inaugural Chair and Founding Member of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Chartered Accountant Committee. So we're a couple of hats there, my brother.
Yeah, for you, mate. Yeah, so it's there's that one, which I love. I'm a director at Bengara Dance Theatre and the YMCA.
Oh, beautiful.
So, yeah, very, very fortunate to wear a number of hats across the community.
Lovely. Now, talking about Monash Business School addresses the lack of Indigenous participation at the most senior levels of corporate life. How is Monash Business School addressing this?
They're doing a phenomenal job down there. I think they've been up and running only for the last sort of few years. But, I mean, there's a number of reasons, I guess, why we're not seeing senior, black leaders on the ASX, particularly, on their boards and then across their management team. So, what they're doing, I guess, is a big step in the right direction in sort of preparing our people to take on some of those roles long term. So, across networking and sort of connections, sort of creating opportunities in a sort of culturally safe sort of environment. So, no, I really like what they're doing there.
Do you feel there should be black faces at senior levels?
Yeah, no, of course.
Of course.
I mean,
yes.
For us, how can we possibly be in charge of our future and sort of with Australia's largest employers and things if we're not around the table making some of those decisions. So I think for us, there's been a history of sort of exclusion to inclusion, and I guess that's sort of, I guess, come to the sort of voice to Parliament and as to why that's sort of come around. So, and I guess for me, to understand the present situations is to understand the past. Collectively, there's a number of reasons why we're not on there, but I think it's really important, and I think it's not only important just for representation and in that you can't be what you can't see, but I do feel like there's a genuine commercial opportunity for these businesses, and I think it's going to go a long way to future-proofing a lot of these ASX businesses and really augment their roles as stewards of Australia's biggest sort of private employers, and that's across, the employee value proposition, their shareholders and stakeholders, and more broadly, there's an emerging middle class of blackfellas coming through. And so they're going to be looking to organisations, who they invest in, where they shop, and who they work for, based on, I guess, social policies that they can relate to and people that in their leadership teams that sort of look and feel like them. So that's something that I probably haven't heard enough about is that commercial opportunity as well, yeah.
So, well, if you look at it, universities as well as government organisations, private business, private enterprise, they should all step up in this space, you know, when you're talking about, procurement or employment of First Nation people, but at the senior level, it's a feather in your cap. It's progress. Here we are talking about, talking here today, and it is National Reconciliation Week. So good timing about conversations like so, don't you think, Joshua?
I couldn't agree more, and I think addressing the challenges sort of in front of us requires a multifaceted approach from corporate Australia and government, so involving initiatives that promote education, professional development, mentorship and networking opportunities together with cultural awareness internally. And I think a big part of that's quotas. You know, they people say, oh, it's all very hard and how do we do it? I mean, there's a blueprint in women from the 90s and the sort of noughties to see how they've, you know, they've made their way to some of these leadership positions, which has just been fantastic to see. I feel like that can be replicated for our people.
And look, there's benefits in having First Nation people at the senior level. You want to elaborate on that, please, Joshua, for businesses, organisations,
again, I think there's a number of benefits. There's obviously the social sort of the benefit to it, but I mean, as I touched on before, so that employee value proposition, it's a tough market out there from frontline staff to chairs. People are seeking more out of their employment than just remuneration these days, and I think we've seen that through the Edelman's Trust Barometer earlier in the year that highlighted, I guess, the public sentiment towards public and other sort of organisations. Shareholders and stakeholders are becoming increasingly engaged and vocal about things that are important to them. So you may have seen a couple of years ago with BHP that they took their environmental plan to a vote of their shareholders, just as an example. So they're getting a lot more engaged. And I think practically at a business level as well, we represent about 3.3% of the population or about 800,000 people. So, and of those people, there is an emerging middle class of folks, and they're going to be looking to their leadership teams and boards for people, again, they can relate to and their social policies, as I mentioned. So, and which is really important when, you know, you're talking about where they're going to invest their money, who they're going to work for, and where they're going to shop from across the board. So, multitude of all positive things.
Exactly.
You know, these corporates should be considering.
Yeah, powerful. So, brother, you're a chartered accountant, also the inaugural chair and founder member of Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Chartered Accountant Committee. Tell us about this vehicle that you head up, and how many black chartered accountants we have out there, brother?
Not enough.
Plenty of room at the top.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, I think there's about, I don't know, in the 30s, sort of officially, of a membership pool of about 145,000 people. So the numbers are appalling. Mm. And I guess for me, how can we possibly be in control of our future if we can't manage our own money?
Exactly.
And I guess I'm incredibly nervous with, you know, all this sort of once-off lump sum monies that we're getting and that we're seeing around the country through Native Determination and sort of other... Mm. other vehicles, and I think for me, I would hate to see Generation 1 and 2, you know, driving around in Land Rovers and jet skis, and Generation, you know, 2 and 3 sort of being back to where we are now.
So, yeah, exactly.
And I think the vehicle that Chartered Accountants Australia and New Zealand are providing is, I guess, we're trying to obviously promote the profession and essentially try to do what the lawyers did back in the 90s. So, I'd love to see more representation across the board. So, we're playing a small role, but, trying to link universities and schools together to sort of make it happen.
Well, a lot of our people are heading towards businesses, you know, and private businesses, which is fantastic. But if you're an artist or if you're a bricklayer or mechanic, whatever the case may be, you have to study business and you have to get financially intelligent. So that's what you're alluding to, aren't you, to get financial intelligence?
No, you're spot on. Financial literacy is something I'm incredibly sort of passionate about. But
yes.
I started my career in corporate restructuring, and what you'd often find is you may be the best chef in town, but it's a very different skill set to running a business.
Yes.
And I think that needs to be, acknowledged and understood more broadly. So, as you mentioned, you know, it's brilliant to see all these entrepreneurs coming through the ranks. And, I think if we can have a team of, you know, accountants is my dream. To be able to support them along that way,
yes.
That's my life's work. I guess.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, enjoy that journey. That's what it's all about, my brother. Beautiful talking with you. Thank you very much, Joshua. Big shout out to your mob there and all our chartered accountants out there under that membership of yours. And great to see Monash Business School addressing the lack of Indigenous participation at the most senior levels of corporate life, and that is beneficial to the universities and government organisations and private businesses as well. Joshua, thank you, brother. Keep smiling. We'll talk soon.
Thanks so much, brother. Have a good day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.
Deadly young there. Joshua Duke, his name is, Chartered Accountant, the inaugural chair and founding member of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Chartered Accountant Committee. And talking about leadership at the top end, black faces in those leadership roles, and not tokenistic. That we're talking about very smart black people who got a valid reason to be there. And look, it is beneficial if you have black faces there, you know. I mean, building a bridge, reconciliation, whatever the case may be. They're true business people. They just happen to be black. So utilize that and add value to your company, to your organization, to your business. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have you saying Yarn Up Strong here, 1-800-422-416.
I've been droving, I've been drinking, I've been Christian, I've been everything. But there's one more thing I gotta tell you before I go. Here I live in this tin shack, nothing here worth coming back. The drunken fights, awful sights, people drunk most every night.
On the way to a brand new day, everybody, everybody say. On the way to a brand new day, everybody.
Yeah, here we are, brand new day, and that is Knuckles Band. And I hope you're having a great day, you mob. This is your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your say in Yarn Up Strong. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. And call that number. Yarn Up is yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry. Coming live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yindingi Country. BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. Just had a deadly yarn with Joshua Duke, Chartered Accountant, inaugural chair, and founding member of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Chartered Accountant Committee. We're talking about Monash Business School addressing the lack of Indigenous participation at the most senior levels of corporate life. And adding to that conversation, we've got Sister Alice Curry on the line. She's Marketing and Communications Manager of the Rili. And on the line, we have Alice. Good morning, Alice. How are you?
I'm good, Trevor. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Before we start, Sister, let the mob know who you mob. Where are you from, Alice?
Hi, everybody. My name is Alice Curry, and I'm a proud Mal and Jolly woman from Yugambeh Country in southeast Queensland.
Right,
good beautiful. Morning, everyone.
Yeah, good morning, and beautiful footprint. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, recent master's degree of Indigenous Business Leadership at Monash University. Congratulations.
Thank you. It was a beautiful 2 years hanging out with these deadly fellas. Absolutely loved every minute of it. The only time I didn't like it was when we were stuck online for a little bit.
Yeah, true. Thanks to COVID-19. Look, too deadly, sister, thank you very much for coming to the program. So we're talking about Monash Business School addressing the lack of Indigenous partnership at the most senior levels of corporate life. Look, I just say it's big benefits if you're having black faces at the senior level, not in a tokenistic sense. We black people are very smart. We're business orientated, entrepreneurs. We just happen to be black, sister.
Yeah. I think that's just a deadly colour skin, to be honest. Makes us look so much more deadly in our clothing, doesn't it?
I think so. It just goes with that and Suzanne's. So true, my sister, so true. But look, it's beneficial having black faces at that level, you know. We're talking about, here we are, National Reconciliation Week. We're talking about building bridges and talking about stamping out racism, but at the same time, not tokenistic. We got very smart black people out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see that every day, even when I was just down New South Wales. I went to the Kingship Festival and just seeing so many deadly blackfellas and their creativity, their dancing, their businesses and what we're all doing out there. It just warmed my heart so much over the weekend. So I think we're all doing amazing stuff. And I'm all for it about elevating our people, whether they are, you know, we look at people and we just think, oh, yeah, because you're in a CEO role, you're the senior person in the role. I've always looked at it, the most powerful person in the organisation is your receptionist. he or she knows what's going on.
Yes.
And that's how we look at that as well with our kids, right? They know what's going on. They know what the conversations are happening at the tables with our aunties and uncles. They're going to be our next leaders. So they're paying attention to how you're doing business at the moment at the table or having that cuppa. So you got to look at them as well to think, hey, everyone is a leader in their own right. Everyone is leading someone or something to a positive direction, whether it's making sure mum's got a cuppa, you know, so she can continue yarning until all hours of the night, or making sure, you know, we've got a house for someone so they can take up residency for the next few months while they finish up doing what they have to do around the area that they're in. So,
Alice, you make a very important statement there. I mean, like the old phrase, high tide rises all ships. We've got to get it together. And if you're talking about the person at the reception, yes, that is the most important person, knows what's happening, what's going on with the organisation or with the company. And we are all important. We're a team, and teamwork makes the dream work. Yeah?
Yeah, and I'm absolutely for all that. And I think that's the thing I loved about the Masters program when I stepped into it. I came into a room thinking, I don't know as much as these deadly fellows here. They're going around the room and we're only like, you know, an hour into the conversation. We've only, you know, touched about three or four people talking about a bit of their life journey and where they come from. And here I'm little old me being like, oh, my life story isn't this big. Okay, I'm probably only going to take up 2 minutes. And I'm one that can yarn for ages. So I was a bit threatened by it by them all. But I think one of the things that I took away from that first few days was, like, when we finally got to know each other and, like, who you mob, what is it that you do, was it that we walk together. And I find that really important because they uplifted each other and even myself as well when I came up and I had enough confidence to say, oh, I didn't know that. Can you expand on that, Sister Nicole or Sister Manara, or, you know, talk to Brother Kenny, and just sitting around and actually being surrounded by love with an unwavering support to say, we want to help you grow. We want to do this. And this was just the cohort. And then obviously the academics as well, having them to sit down and just say, it's okay if you don't know. That's the point of growing as a leader. That's the point of growing as yourself.
Yes.
And I think that was the inspiring thing for the, you know, through the last 2 years, we all band together. We kept on chatting for WhatsApp. We uplifted each other for, you know, our social media platforms to say, well done, if we did that on LinkedIn, or we sent out some private messaging. Or even now, if we see each other in person, we'll get a quick photo and just share it around the group saying, hey, look who I ran into. I think this is very inspiring for me. And it, by doing that, it allowed us to also practice these principles in the work that we do. So I thought that was just even better because I took that back to the organisations where I work, and I'm just like, we should be uplifting ourselves. We got to, because, you know, we get all this from non-Indigenous organisations that sometimes put us down, that think we're not good enough, or we shouldn't be in this space, or we're not the experts in this space. But that's where we should band together and be like, oh, we walk together as blackfellas. We shouldn't be fighting against each other. We get told every day we only make up 3% of the population, so why would we want to fight against each other and make that population less?
Exactly. Yeah, we're all in this together, and we've got to rise together, you know. And the old phrase, success breeds success. And the more successful black people we can have there, the better it is for our young ones up and coming. And with respect to our brothers out there kicking the pig skin around, you know, rugby league, NRL and AFL, we need more black successes, not only on the football field, I always say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, too deadly. Look, fantastic. And congratulations. So where are you at, and what are you doing with your master's there, sister?
Oh, well, I'm still looking for someone to supply me with a picture frame for it.
Okay, there you go. available. Take anybody's money.
I do. I really want to get a deadly picture frame for it. I want to get some beautiful wood for it. But no, back to seriousness, Mr. Jim. I think for me, I've taken this on board, and I work I've been working for the last year and a bit now in a thoroughly the Indigenous Suicide Postvention Service for our people in the marketing comms role. So that's been quite a difficult space, and working in a marketing comms role to say, hey, we're here when you need us is not something that's taught in the Western lens about how do you promote something that you want people to come to, but it's at their worst times. So marketing 101 is all about, you know, hey, there's a sale on, how do we attract people to buy the latest iPod sort of thing.
Exactly.
This is a different form. And so being a leader in that space and actually thinking more strategically, and especially this degree helped me to cultivate that strategic mindset. Good. So in the last 2 years, that's really helped me to think we need to reposition ourselves. We really need to think strategically. How do we you know, attract our mob to our service to know that this is a culturally safe space for them to come to us when they're ready, because we don't come on, oh, yeah, we hear that this has happened. We come on invitation. So we do it on best practice and obviously our terms of reference. And so I've been put into that role to think more strategically for this year and moving forward now that I've got my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to be more outspoken about, you know, how do we, you know, raise that awareness around us being experts, where we are that in, against governments, against other non-for-profits that think, oh, yeah, we do that too. And it's like, yeah, but we know our people.
Yes.
We know what they want. We shouldn't be, we should be collaborating together. So I'm looking at collaborating with other organisations that are, you know, Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander-led that are working in this space because, as I said before, we should be working together. We shouldn't be fighting against funds to say, exactly. Okay, there's a $10 million contract going about. Well, let's have that. Let's collaborate. So every time I work in my role of marketing comms, I'm like, how can I get a black business or a black other organisation out there to support us to promote this? Because I want to think more strategically because I'm like going, we need to do this together as leaders to say this is how we do best practice, and thinking about that is really important. And I just feel like, you know, being one person that's educated, when you're talking to other people, they sometimes feel worried that you're going to dominate the field. But sure. No, for me, I'm like, I come in going, I want to know from you. What is it that you tell me?
Exactly.
Let's talk
exactly.
And have that yarn.
Look, a very important space you work in there, and so very important. And what I see is, sick people need help, and you're helping them get out of that that dark space, so to speak. If they're out of the dark space, then they can look up, and the vision for what they want to be and what they want to do, that creates a platform. So it's a very important space a vehicle that you're driving there, my sister, and more power to you, Alice, to Deadly.
Thank you, Trevor.
Well, good yarning with you. Keep doing what you're doing. Please do keep in touch. And big shout out to all the other Deadly Black people out there, getting their degrees and getting their masters and then acting on it and thriving in the business world, so to speak. But being Deadly at being Black.
I think more Deadly fellows need to look at it. Like, if I was to say one thing for all those out there that are thinking, like, you know, education, it's very much a Western system and I don't know if I can do this or why do I even bother? It's a shame that we are in a position where we have to play in both worlds, like that we have to go through the education
feed in both system. Camps.
But I think the thing is, look at it this way, guys. Like, this degree I just did, I've done a certificate, I've done a diploma, and I've done a bachelor, and all of it was hard. I was not your A-plus student. I wasn't getting A's. I was scraping by getting C's if I was lucky. And to finish with a master's degree, this master's degree was such a holistic approach where I felt comfortable at the level of education that I had in terms of, like, just barely getting by. The support that the academics gave me, the support that my brothers and sister gave me, that I didn't even know until I walked into the room who they were. And then by the first week, we were so tight. As I said, it was a shame when COVID happened because we grew such a strong bond to each other.
Yes.
This degree was unlike any other degree I did. I felt so supported, so safe. And at any point in time, I needed to go back home or I needed to connect with country or culture or whoever that may be. They had my back, being the students and the staff there. And this degree was there for you. They supported you. They wanted to know from you, what is your expert? We got told to challenge the academics, which was a different concept I've never heard before.
Yeah.
When I was studying my undergrad, we always got told, okay, this is how you do things. And when we actually outspoken and saying, no, that doesn't work in our community.
Mm.
That doesn't work. This is what we got. The academics would sit down
and listen.
And they would listen.
They become
would actually
students.
Genuinely listen. And I mean that they actually genuinely listen. And what they did was they flipped how they taught us. They wanted to know what the struggles were. When we actually delivered our assignments, it was on our terms in terms of this is what's happening in our community. This is what's happening in our workplaces. That's why we can't do this, what you say, in a Western world. Because it doesn't work for us. Because we already have all this red tape already in front of us before we even apply for something or do something. Because the government or whoever we're speaking to always has this idea of who we are.
There's not one size fits all, eh?
The degree that I think will elevate you and make you smarter, for sure.
Yes.
But it will also empower you.
Yeah.
Empower you to know that you are right to challenge the system. These are the ways that you can challenge the system, working in your world as well as challenging the westernized system. And that's what this degree did for me. And I think all the new cohort that's come through, I know one of my friends is in it. I'm very happy that he's in it. And I can't wait to see what he does next. But I think if you have a chance in whatever degree you're studying to challenge your academics to say, hey, I think this isn't right. This doesn't work for my people. This, I don't understand this. You challenge that system.
Yes.
You have every right to, because you operate in a different environment to these other academics and students. You're either working with communities, you're working with your families to, you know, do something to help them, to elevate them. That's why you're studying. But you can challenge the system. You have every right to.
Every
and I
right.
I think that's the deadly thing I loved about this course was we challenged,
every
and we
right.
were heard, and we just appreciated. Mm. And they took so much from us. Like, they hated that they had to go back to the classroom and go back to what they were teaching. But they took a lot of learnings on board, saying, how do I incorporate this more into the studies I'm, you know, teaching at the other units I'm doing? So challenge the system
challenge
that you're
the system.
In, especially in an education field, because you should be walking up on that stage feeling, I did this. I'm
proper
so proud it. Of myself. I've got myself here. With, yes, the support of family, friends, whoever helped you along the way, but you're the one that's going to be holding that piece of paper and looking back at it 5, 10 years from now and be like, I'm proud of myself for
yes.
that. I'm glad I did that. It's not the fact that you did it from a Western point of view saying, oh, yeah, I've got a bachelor's degree. I'm proud of my master's degree. That's why I really want to frame it in a frame that I can look at every day and be like, I love the wood that's around that. I walked up on that stage and I couldn't be more proud of myself. And when I walked up there and I waved to my family up there and my fellow grads, I was so excited. It warmed me so much. So I... to all of you out there that are pursuing education, do it. Just do it.
Do it. Beautiful talking with you, Alice. Thank you very much, my sister. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. We'll yarn soon. That's Alice. Alice Curry, marketing and communications and managing at Thirilli. And we're talking about Monash Business School's addressing the lack of Indigenous participation at the most senior levels of corporate life, and picking up what Alice was saying there, wherever you are, challenge the people in front of you, your so-called seniors, especially if they're non-Indigenous, challenge about how it does work for us or how it doesn't work for us as in First Nation people. And education is the tool. Have feet in both camps is what she was talking about. They've been successful in your culture, but also in the business world as well. Fantastic. Beautiful advice and good yarning there. Yarning there with Alice Curry and also earlier Joshua Duke, Chartered Accountant, Nilgal Chair and founding member of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Chartered Accountant Committee. And we were talking about Monash Business School addressing the lack of Indigenous participation at the most senior levels of corporate life. Yes, we are, as I said, very... successful entrepreneurs, business people, happen to be black, too deadly. Have you seen Yarn Up Strong? Add to the conversation in National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Always there, but I get so sick and- poison that you drink. The further you will fall, you fall, you fall.
Thinking about your body next to mine, butterflies gonna keep on flying. You're too messed up to remember.
Hey, you mob, it's Jessica Malvoy, and you're tuned into National Talk Black, Trevor Tim, Trendy Turf, Murray from the Curry via BBM 98.7 FM, also NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service.
Yeah, to Deadly Mob, welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. Have your saying, Yana Upstrong. Deadly number here is 1-800-422-416. Yana with the Bully One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji Country, BBM Bumba Brip Midi, 98.7 FM. And we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National News Radio Service. You can also text the brothers as well, 045-714-0550. And don't forget our Facebook page as well, BBM 987 FM. All right, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Dudley sister Mary McGuinness, midwifery director, and talk about maternity services on solid ground at Cairns Hospital. We're talking about giving life and the start of life, and I got her to join me here in the studio. Mary, very good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, Tim. Lovely to be here.
Good. Fantastic. Just move that microphone a little bit closer to you so I can hear you. You got a bit of an accent there, Mary. Where do you stem from, sister?
Oh, I stem originally from Ireland, the south of Ireland, Cork.
From Ireland?
Yes.
Okay. Good. You were saying that you've been doing some work up in the Torres Straits and talking to the kids there, and they asked you where you're from. Tell us the story.
Oh, well, it's lovely. When we're up in Thursday Island walking, they'd say, "Where are you from, miss?" And you'd say, "I'm from Ireland." And they'd say, Yeah. What island? What island are you from?
That's right. We know you're from the island. Torres Straits, which island? No, Ireland.
And I did say, "I'm from Ireland." And they went, "Oh, long way away, miss." And I said, "Yeah." They said, "Is it at the Gold Coast?" And I go, "Oh, even further."
Beautiful. Add the mouths of babes.
Indeed.
You know? Yeah, beautiful. Indeed. So talk about maternity services on solid ground at Cairns Hospital. So we're talking about maternity. We're talking about giving life. We're talking about a foundation for that life.
Absolutely. Mm. One of the most important times in a family's life when new babies are coming. Mm. Absolutely. And I will say some of the most graceful women for having babies would be our First Nations women, our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island women. They are just stunning at the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. Thank you. And in your space up there at the Cairns Hospital, midwifery, any First Nation crew on board?
We do. We actually have some First Nation staff. We have one of our lovely midwives as a First Nation midwife. And then we also have our fabulous, fabulous health worker, Anna DeBosch. I'm sure lots of your listeners have met Anna. She makes an effort to meet all our Indigenous women when they come in to have their babies, because you know, it's really nice speaking to one of your own familiar
black
people
on black,
when you come
exactly
to the hospital. Absolutely.
Having that communication, having that yarn.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. And so a lot of work as well is done. Well, when you look at the work in the Cape York and Torres Straits where you're working up there, here at the Cairns Base Hospital, it's a great operation.
It is. It's an incredible operation. And we have absolutely fabulous partnerships with people who work delivering care in the antenatal space up in the Cape and the Torres Strait. But even here in Cairns, we have fabulous organisations like Wuchopperin.
Yes.
Over in Yarraba, we have fabulous people in Gurunee. So obviously, it's very much a question of partnering with those people. Mm. And then obviously, we need some of our staff. We have some lovely midwife navigators on the Cape and in the Straits. Mm. And we have our own navigator. They're really those people that make the change from one place to the other really seamless. It's really difficult for women having to travel so far to have their babies.
Sure,
you know,
exactly.
So not just, I mean, we have a big number of Indigenous women who live in the Greater Cairns area, mm. but we also have to be mindful of all those women who are travelling from further distances. Exactly. Yarraba is a long way, even though it's quite close to us, but obviously if you have to come from the Tablelands or the Cape or the Straits, even further. So,
well, we're talking about delivering a baby. That in itself is a journey, is it not?
It absolutely a long journey. That is a long
journey. And journey for life thereafter.
Indeed. It would be nice, wouldn't it, if all the hard work was done by the time the baby came. But in actual fact, I think it's probably only just beginning.
Just beginning.
Really.
Yeah. Exactly. Your non-Indigenous staff, are they culturally awareness? Is that at the table?
I think hugely. So we put all our staff that come through specific cultural awareness training, and we have a fantastic unit that does a lot of that training. But it's an ongoing thing, isn't
sure,
it, really?
It is.
So a lot of the time, and we depend hugely on our health worker, on Anna, for feeding back, because every now and then we don't get it right. Mm. So obviously we're constantly looking at where we could do it better. We're listening to the feedback. We're hearing, you know, what would make things easier
yes.
for people, and where have we fallen down. So do I think we're perfect? No.
No.
But do I think we've come a long way, and are we very aware of the need to continue working on it? Massively.
Massively, yeah. Massively. So when we're talking about maternity, midwifery, there's a course for that, and you have to get a degree for that?
You do. So I guess if you were going to come into the maternity space, there are lots of different ways you could think about coming into it, even if you're specifically looking at Indigenous care and Indigenous careers.
Mm.
Obviously, there's fabulous training through TAFE for health workers and health practitioners, and a lot of the First Nation staff have come through that way. But increasingly now we have student midwives coming through the various universities.
And it is a profession, is it not?
It is an absolute standalone, fantastic, call me biased, perfect profession.
You're biased.
Absolutely. Mm. But yeah, so really and truly, the opportunities are terrific. It's hard.
And that's male and female.
Male and female. I will say we still have the upper hand, us females.
Thank you.
And I guess really when we look at our...
You've got all the tools, don't you?
I guess when we look at our, particularly our Indigenous women, I think there would still be a feeling there that it's women's business.
Thank you. Yes,
but
exactly.
There is no doubt about it. Maybe the world is changing a little bit. But, I think certainly when you talk to our health workers and our health staff from the Indigenous, there is still a big feeling that this is a big world of women's business.
Sure, you know? Exactly. But and look, we First Nation are strong on that, men's business, women's business, and don't go there. But look, so important. When you say TAFE, do they need to go to university as such to get a degree as a midwife?
Look, as a midwife, you have to go to university. That's currently the only way to become
and what's
a midwife.
What's that, 3-year course?
Yeah, it's a three. It can be, if you're a nurse already, it's an 18-month course. If you're coming straight in, depending on which university, it's going to be between 3 and 4 years.
Okay.
So lots of learning, but lots of practical work, as you can imagine. The whole art of growing babies, delivering babies, looking after them, very hands-on. So lots of practical teaching involved in it as well. Yes.
And the job continues after the baby comes to the mother life?
Absolutely. I think for midwives, we would say our job continues really into the first 6 or 12 weeks.
Okay.
But we're very much, I mean, you will be aware there's lots of talk about the first 1,000 days being huge for babies.
Yes.
So obviously, again, that's very much that partnership, isn't it, with the health workers who take over early childhood and the early childhood nurses who take over all that care. So that once the mum has had her baby and she's recovered and the baby is growing, she kind of moves fairly seamlessly on then to early childhood and child health, just to keep everything ticking along nicely, making sure babies are doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing. They're growing, they're putting on weight, they're causing havoc in the house, as babies do.
As they do. Is it midwifery, are they communicating with the partners?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I guess I'm old enough now that I started my midwifery journey where dads weren't hugely involved in the whole business of baby, you know, growing and baby delivering. It has changed hugely. And I think any man who's ever been in a birth suite when their baby arrives in the world will tell you that they wouldn't have missed it for anything, albeit that it may have been a slightly stressful day. But yeah, it's a very special
thing. Well, I cut all 4 umbilical cords for my 4.
Well done. Congratulations.
So, doctor of happiness. Look, it's a beautiful journey, and it's about giving life. And then we're talking about the foundation of that life, you know?
Exactly.
And that's where the midwifery comes in thereafter, hence
Very
my question.
Much. Yeah. Absolutely. No, I think really good starts always leads to good beginnings, leads to good endings. So, yeah, I think it's very important that, and I guess the one thing we've talked about care and we've talked about healthcare, I guess a huge component in a midwife's life with women is this whole notion of education, giving people an idea of what to expect at every point, of what to be looking out for in their pregnancy, what to be looking out for with their small babies, what to be looking out for their toddlers, you know, because really and truly this notion of us all being aware of what we need to keep healthy and to keep strong, really, really important. I'm going to say probably one of the most important places, I think, where we have a role for our Indigenous health staff.
Yes.
Because, again, I think those are much easier messages to take from your own people.
Exactly.
You know, you're culturally
Nicely
aware
said.
Of everything that's kind of happening
said.
In any home and that. So that's another area, I think, that our Indigenous staff do unbelievably well. Yeah.
Lovely. So, Mary McGuinness, our midwifery director, all the way from Ireland. How long have you been on the Big Island, Australia?
Oh, look, I've been on the Big Island since 1988.
So okay. What made you come this way?
Well, I came here as a backpacker, as many midwives do.
For a weekend?
For a year.
8 years later.
And, yeah, forgot to leave the way these things happen.
So when you come to Australia, as a backpacker, where Sydney? Cairns?
Well, I came originally to Melbourne.
Okay.
Did the 12-month trip like
people Were you
do.
A midwife at that
I
time?
Was,
you was,
absolutely.
Okay.
And I was a midwife in Melbourne, and then we worked for a little while in Darwin, and then I came here to what was the Cairns Base Hospital at the time and worked there. And I did comment that it was quite a nice place and I wouldn't mind living here, but I wouldn't say it was a life's ambition.
Yes.
But it did make me laugh when I ended up
here. For the whole life, here you are.
Yeah. And then, I took up my residency and worked in Sydney.
Yes.
But interestingly enough, in Sydney, quite a few nurses and midwives that I worked with said, you should go to TI, Mary. TI is amazing.
Isn't there Zell and Torres Strait?
Yes, the Torres Strait. It's amazing. The little island, the little hospital sits just under the sea. When the tide comes in, it's under the building. And it just sounded like an adventure. So we did. We came to
you
Thursday
did.
Island.
So how long were you at TI for?
Well, we came for 2-3 months and we stayed for 2 years.
There you go.
And then we left TI and came to the big city.
Cairns.
I forgot to leave it. That was in 1995. So
okay.
Yeah, I've been pretty much here ever since at the Cairns.
So you're
hospital.
Good with our with us black folk.
Oh, some of the best people I've ever met.
Beautiful sister. Well, thank you very much. Good yarning with you. Yeah. We claim you as a sister.
Oh,
so there you go, Mary.
And I'm very privileged for that. Thank you.
Beautiful yarning with you. So we can say Cairns Hospital has got solid ground regarding the maternity service.
Solid ground.
Solid
Absolutely
ground.
Solid
Beautiful,
ground.
The
sir.
Headlines title here. Well, thank you very much, Mary. You keep smiling. We'll talk soon.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn. Mary McGuinness, her name is, our midwifery director, and talking about Cairns Hospital, solid ground in regards to maternity services, providing beautiful services and bringing beautiful bambinos, piccaninnies into the world and giving them a strong foundation for their future. And that's what it's all about. It's about life, isn't it? Hope you're having a good life, your mob. Add to the conversation here. 11 minutes ago on the program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
Walk about along a Chinatown Hill, mark and posse, punk along corner, suti apu sekeme, kikin bucket denikani. Yes, you love us and you see what a martini. Money, no matter me, darling,
about Long Chinatown. That's Centini here on your daily program, National Talk Black. We got Trevor Peckham on the line. Trevor, good morning. How are you, my brother?
You know, I'm feeling outstanding.
Shaking a leg.
Joy is over the moon, my brother.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. We're talking about the catch-up that we had this morning down there on the main jetty, Marlin Jetty, where we had Big Cat Cruises, Reef Unlimited, doing a celebration of National Reconciliation, and had the crew there shake a leg and perform. And, of course, you were there doing your thing, my brother.
Are you seeing me?
Yeah, there, brother. Represent. I told everybody I knew you. No one believed me. I want you to sign something, brother.
You know what I'm saying, my brother. And it was the most outstanding, joyful celebration and momentous moment, you know?
Yeah,
and
beautiful.
Just to see all them young people's faces just glow.
Yeah, exactly. Performing, right. Perform, you there? Can you hear me?
I'm hearing you loud and clear, big bro.
Yeah, good, brother. Yeah, to have them young ones perform with their culture, and then it's part of their job, and they're getting paid to do that. And you can see the passion in their eyes when they're performing.
Normal.
Yeah, normal. Exactly, brother. Powerful. Powerful.
Yes. Mm. And through that normality, those babies have a belonging.
Yes.
Their spirit is nourished.
Yes.
And they walk away feeling achieved.
Yeah, exactly, brother.
And that being a part of that moment was just my greatest, you know.
It was beautiful.
And it was even more beautiful that I didn't have to play Digi.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Didge man you are.
That's why.
The young ones took over.
That's why you're seeing him dancing today.
That's right, brother.
You know, that's the case, you know?
Yes.
So, yeah, my family. But no, look, I just wanted to also say thank you to Big Bro.
Thank you, my brother.
For your contributions to all to the date today, Big Bro.
Beautiful.
But especially for being the most inspiring of us here in Kansas.
You're beautiful, my brother. You're beautiful.
You know,
namesake, namesake.
Well, it is my big bro. You know, you're a good-looking one. I'm just the mongrel, terrible one. You know?
One so, love, brother.
You know, when we rock up, that's called a TT.
The TT.
And you know, everyone go, ooh, that look good too, the TT. Hey, you know what I'm saying, black fellas, you know? But yeah, back to the more joyful moment, my brother.
Today, my brother.
You know, when it comes to this reconciliation, it's the most utmost important that the reality of the moment is about uniting communities, nations, and recognizing each other as a people of one home.
Exactly. It's all simple, isn't it, really?
Yes, my brother. We share this land called Omia, and because we're very welcoming and joyful people, such a day for a week is one of the greatest times for all of us to put down your weapons of mass discretion, you know?
Racism.
And just put on the joyfulness of love and engage this week, you know?
Exactly.
Really start to show in community as united, because that's what the word reconciliate means, to get back together.
Yes.
You know? And whenever they've done the conciliation in Australia with our Aborigines and the imperial force that come through, when they did that conciliation, this is why now we're doing a reconciliation.
Yes.
Because the present moment is a past tense of the conciliation. Which means that the Aboriginal people and the imperial force sat down and they disclosed their truth. And through disclosing their truths and being truthful at the table, that's called conciliate.
Yep.
And from that is why we have today a week of reconciliation celebration.
Bring it back.
That's right, my big bro. Because that's what we've always advocated for, the Nunji, the people, the family of Australia.
Care and sharing people.
We've always advocated, that we are one and one for all.
And,
we don't have four musketeers. We have plenty.
Yes.
You know, if one gets slack, another fella jump in quick, you know.
Pick up the slack, exactly.
That's it, my big bro. You know, and the other thing too, you know, just on this week as we're going through, I've seen the Minister for Australia's Indigenous Affairs chuck another plug in for the voice to Parliament.
Mm.
And then straight after that, I heard another senator say, well, you know, it's a very unfair thing to do to only get one group of people belong to. I have to say at the moment, I'm looking at about probably four different geographies that make up the nation of Australia. And Buluru, with a B in the front, B-U-L-U-R-U, that's all of the East Coast Mountain.
Yes.
And that senator was saying that it's very, basically they haven't conciliated, them fellas.
Yes.
And because the nations of Aborigines haven't conciliated with themselves to now go and reconciliate, they're trying to say that the voice will bring that together. Well, my big bro, the thing that I found interesting out of all of that was that the auntie was saying, but the thing is, we haven't conciliated. So how can you have one group making the forefront for the Imperial Force as tick the box for everyone in the group? Well, that's never been the case. I mean, when I was at school and I tried to tick the box, yep, yes, let's go. The mob that didn't even have a chance, they all looked at me and called me horrible.
Yeah.
So even when I was
everyone needed to get the right, get all the information to make the right decisions.
That's called normal, my big bro.
Normal, yes.
You know? And in our home here in Australia, the one thing that we cherish the most is a normal way of life.
Mm.
And I tell you what, people, us as the people of Australia, I want to give us all a very, very big glad clap and joy.
Yes.
Because one of the things that we stand out above all the other nations of this world, and ones that are in conflict today, even though they're cousins.
My brother, I've got to go to the news, my brother.
Yes. No, but yeah, with the love family, Guri and Garu.
Garu.
And yes.
Beautiful yarn there. Trevor Peckham, Trinity Trev signs off for today's program. Thank you for your company, Mob. Stay black, stay deadly, stay strong. Yarn soon.